today, I'd like to read a short sutta from the Anguttara Nikaya, Book of Threes. This is Sutta 96. The title is Thoroughbred, as in like a thoroughbred horse. Bhikkhus, possessing three factors, a king's excellent thoroughbred horse is worthy of a king, an accessory of a king, and reckoned as a factor of kingship. What three? Here, a king's excellent thoroughbred horse possesses beauty, strength, and speed. Possessing these three factors, a king's excellent thoroughbred horse is reckoned as a factor of kingship. So too, possessing three qualities, a bhikkhu is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. What three? Here, a bhikkhu possesses beauty, strength, and speed. 1. And how does a bhikkhu possess beauty? Here, a bhikkhu is virtuous. He dwells restrained by the Patimokkha, possessed of good conduct and resort, seeing danger in minute faults. Having undertaken the training rules, he trains in them. It is in this way that a bhikkhu possesses beauty. And how does a bhikkhu possess strength? Here, a bhikkhu arouses energy for abandoning unwholesome qualities and acquiring wholesome qualities. He is strong, firm in exertion, not casting off the duty of cultivating wholesome qualities. It is in this way that a bhikkhu possesses strength. And how does a bhikkhu possess speed? Here, a bhikkhu understands as it really is. This is suffering, and this is the origin of suffering, and this is the cessation of suffering, and this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. It is in this way that a bhikkhu possesses speed. Possessing these three qualities, a bhikkhu is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Okay, so this is aimed at monastics, but there's, I think, a lot of wisdom here which we can all benefit from, even if we're not monastics. And what I want to dwell on more is this third one about a bhikkhu possessing speed. Okay, so this is interesting. This is a rare time when speed gets a different and unusual definition. Normally we think of speed like a fast car, a fast motorbike, a fast airplane, fast runner. So, you know, monks were actually forbidden from running in case our robes go flying off. There was this occasion once where a monk was running away from a tiger. And as he was running, his robes flew off. And then he came into the village totally naked, you know. So then it was forbidden for monks to run after that incident. How embarrassing. But he didn't get eaten by the tiger, so that's good. That's the good part of the story. Now here, speed is, it's like a mental quality here, okay? The bhikkhu understands as it really is. This is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So this is not just knowing the Four Noble Truths, but one's speed in applying them, okay? That's a big deal here. And this is what makes a monk into not just a horse, but a thoroughbred horse. This is one of the excellent, valuable examples of a good horse. And I think we live in a time now where it's harder than ever to kind of get this one right. Once in a while, I like to look at the statistics of how many hours a day people use their smartphones. And it's a lot. If you think of people even 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, those people of the past are really different than the people of today in how you look at their lives they're living, how they spend their time, what they do with their time. And the thing about having these smartphones all the time, they're so convenient. There's always something interesting in there to see. And it's very easy to lose this perspective here that is in the sutta, this of this is suffering, this is suffering. You know, even though the stuff in our phones is very entertaining and interesting, and Buddhism would have us see through that as suffering, even if it just causes us to continue our samsaric journey all the stronger. The Buddha has a simile in another sutta. It's like, imagine a monkey swinging through a jungle from one vine to the next. And when we keep finding interesting, entertaining things, each one of them is like grabbing a vine. We just go from one vine to the next one. And we just repeat that over and over and over again. And we can be stuck in that forever. So what rather difficult job is for the monks is to have this speed where we see through this as suffering. Even though a lot of these things might actually be helpful, they might be beneficial or intelligent or relevant or not a bad thing. It's this pattern where we swing from vine to vine. That's kind of the bigger problem that we are to see through. That's a tough one to see because it requires us to have a perspective where we kind of back away from it and see the bigger picture. The more that we use our phones, the more that we focus on even on these little screens, it becomes harder and harder to see the big picture. So that's kind of here's a great English word, pernicious. Pernicious. It means like difficult and unintuitive as well. You know, vexing and problematic. You know, it's like a bad problem, worse than normal problem. So when we lose sight of the big picture, that is a pernicious problem. The big picture here in Buddhism is samsara. Most of us, it's easy to see the big picture as, well, just our lifespan, you know. How are we going to manage this one lifespan? That's hard enough. A lot of Canadians I know, the more conscientious ones, they're not really Buddhists, but the more conscientious ones, they will have like a 5-year plan. Like, that's planning a long time for a Canadian. If you meet a Canadian, they have a 5-year plan. That's like long-term thinking for a Canadian. You know, oh, I want to get this university degree, or I want to save up for a down payment on a house, or something for their future. It's hard enough to even think 5 years in the future these days. And then bigger than that is our whole lifespan. How are we going to have some kind of retirement? Who's going to take care of us when we're old? That's kind of the bigger picture there. But then Buddhism's like, okay, but with this samsara thing and rebirth, if we were wise, we would expand that picture even larger to many lifetimes. So that is a challenge to keep kind of reframing. I like this word, reframing, you know, kind of get our story straight, reframe the story. Samsara is actually the big picture here. Not just till the end of this life, not just for 5 years from now, not just today, what do we got to get done today? There's actually this very good saying, a very good saying of Confucius, actually. Once in a while, Confucius has something awesome, and I have to agree that Buddhism really fits nicely with it. He has a saying that goes, petty man gets stuck on the details, while great man sees the big picture. Okay? I'll say it again. Petty man gets stuck on the details, while great man sees the big picture. And I feel that the world we live in now is very detail-oriented, and it's hard to see that big picture. There's many small details that we get pulled into, especially on our smartphones and whatnot. And a lot of the businesses now, a lot of the like subscriptions we subscribe to or the accounts we sign up for, all these services, they are designed where if you are not attentive to detail, they'll make more money off you. They're hoping you don't pay much attention. They're hoping you just kind of sign up and do all the default simple things and never really look at the settings, never really adjust the preferences, never really fine-tune anything, never really pay close attention. And then they kind of sneak their interests in there. They make more money off you. So you're kind of punished these days because of an inattentiveness to detail. A lot of these services are actually really good services. They're even free. But you have to really be careful how you use them. You really got to look in those settings and the preferences and turn off the, no, I don't want your newsletter, and no, I don't want personalized ads. And, you know, you really got to kind of nail down all this unwanted things they try to sneak in there. So that kind of makes it more difficult, I say, to see the big picture. Because we're sort of punished when we aren't attentive to detail. Financially punished. So the world is a more difficult place now because of that. It's the job of monks like me to come along and be like, let's not forget the big picture, everybody. Let's not forget that samsara is the real story here. What I love about the teachings of the Buddha is how unbelievably insightful he was around making the best of our, you might say, limitations as humans. There are certain, you might say, shortcomings that we have psychologically, and he's great at knowing where those shortcomings are and warning us about them. Let me give you an example. Now, back at the time of the Buddha, there was, of course, no big science to speak of. There was certainly no, like, neuroscience. Modern neuroscience has a lot of new insights around how our brains work. And it turns out the Buddha was giving great advice, given how it turns out the brain works when you learn a lot about it. So here's a really good example of this. A really good book that several monks I know were all kind of recommending to each other. One of the great things about being a monk, you get recommendations of some really good books. Like, I've read several really interesting books I wouldn't have read if I didn't ordain. So one of these books is called The Master and His Emissary by Ian McGilchrist. And he's a Westerner neuroscientist who is actually quite, you might say, Buddhist friendly. I don't know if I'd call him like a super duper Buddhist, but he's Buddhist friendly anyway. And he has a lot of appreciation for the wisdom which Eastern religions do have that Western thinking doesn't really have. Anyway, he points out in this book that when we use our minds in very logical, analytical, rational ways, when we focus on some technical problem, we get really technical about something. And we have to do that sometimes. There's no escape from it. When we do that, this is unintuitive. There's kind of a stickiness, he calls it a stickiness, whereby our brain will want to continue thinking that way. Okay? The more we use our minds in a analytical, logical, problem-solving kind of way, the more we do that, the more our brains want to stick that way and continue doing it more. Now, we would assume, why? It shouldn't be like that. I should just solve problems when I want to and stop when I want to. But no, it's sticky. Now, sort of the other way to use our minds, so that's petty man gets stuck on the details. Okay? Being all problem solving, you have to get into the details. Now, the other way we would use our minds, if we were wise, is great man sees the big picture. So there is this sort of different, you could almost say like a mode of our brain. Like our brain can shift into this different mode where we see the big picture. And we feel much happier. We feel much more peaceful. We feel much more calm, much more connected with other people and empathetic, and you know, that's actually like a different mode that your mind can shift into. And Buddhism would say like, yes, do that, meditate, attain the jhanas, attain the brahmaviharas. You very much go into that mode. And the Buddha is training us to do that with all this mindfulness and all these wonderful teachings. And this is to counterbalance and even decondition that stickiness I just mentioned, that stickiness from being too much of problem solvers, too analytical. The more we can come out of that stickiness, suttas like this one I read, that's our speed. That's the thoroughbred speed. What somebody who is spiritually skilled learns to do, they get very fast. They get very well practiced. It's sort of like, yeah, solve problems when you need to, but then quickly run away from the stickiness again and come back to that peaceful place, that kind of great man sees the big picture kind of way of using our minds. We come back to our object of meditation. We come back to a grounded sense of being in the present. We come back to just the simplicity and ease of life. And we stop, if we're wise, we stop solving any more problems than we need to. Okay? Sometimes we do have to solve problems in our life. Buddhism would say, okay, solve them if you need to. Solve them if the world brings problems to you. Okay? But whenever we go farther than that, and we want to go solving problems of our own desire, okay? The world didn't really ask us to fix the problem. But we're like, no, I want to change something. I see a problem here, I want to fix it. Buddhism calls this like desire. This is tanha. Okay? We could have left it alone. We didn't have to make trouble when there was none. So Buddhism, and this is all to do with kamma, okay, our intention, what we choose to do, making kamma. Sometimes the problems we want to solve are actually problems that, you know, would improve this world. They'd be beneficial. They would be helpful. Maybe we want to make our city a better place, or our country a better place, or our family, you know, whatever, improve things. And it is beneficial. So Buddhism calls this good kamma, but it's worldly kamma. Now, if you're a Buddhist monk or a nun, there's this different kind of kamma, which is the kamma leading to the ending of worldly kamma. And basically, we as monastics, and this, you know, this is kind of a lifetime training, even though we want to help the world, maybe want to make a positive change in our community and help, there's so many problems in this world to help out with, you know, there's no shortage. But if we want to attain Nibbana, and that's the whole reason we ordained is to attain Nibbana. If we want to attain Nibbana, we have to get good at this kamma leading to the ending of kamma. Okay, kamma leading to the ending of worldly kamma. This is a subtle distinction. As opposed to just the good kamma, the worldly good kamma. And this distinction, we can draw a nice dotted line. Once again, I'll repeat. What Buddhist monks and nuns would do if they were wise, only fix problems, only go into problem-solving mode, okay? When the world brings us a problem. But if we go wanting to solve problems of our own volition, making that worldly good kamma, that is, I hate to say it, it's like the monkey is continuing to swing from the vines, though, in samsara. Even though it's for a good reason. It's still the monkey swings on the vines forever. It doesn't lead to Nibbana. Okay, so once again, the dotted line is like when the world brings us problems. Yes, we should do something about it. But then go back to the object of meditation. Go back to mindfulness. Go back as fast as possible to cultivating these wholesome states of mind. Just like the sutta was saying that I read. Not casting off the duty of cultivating these wholesome states. This is an interesting distinction, I think, between Theravada Buddhism and Mahayana Buddhism. I think the Mahayana would disagree with me here, saying, well, the Bodhisattva path is to work towards everybody attaining Nibbana at the same time, way in the future, like just in eons into the future. And yes, let's make worldly good karma in the meantime. Let's see what benefit we can bring into this world. The Theravada view is like, okay, but that's cool. That is good karma. But what about this karma leading to the ending of karma? That's what I think is lost when this Bodhisattva path thing is prioritized. There is a loss of an emphasis on this karma leading to the ending of karma. And it's very easy to fall into this stickiness that I mentioned earlier, the stickiness of getting into a problem-solving mindset to the exclusion of this, like, great man sees the big picture. And once again, the big picture is samsara in Buddhism.